When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I am Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, Brian Reese.
Hey, that's me. I'm here.
You are here.
I am here. I am present.
Yes, indeed.
I think I was the kid in grade school who, when they did roll call, I always had to say present.
I was the kid in the back behind you, rolling my eyes, going, oh,
jeez. And I didn't get beat up for it.
Yet.
There's still time.
Yeah. So here we are. Today on the program, we are going to be discussing The Rocketeer, the nostalgia-filled retro comic.
Va-va-voom.
Va-va-voom. And perhaps we'll mention the movie along the way.
We could.
I don't know. I like it.
I may have seen the movie, but not in any form that I remember.
Yeah. So it's Joe Johnson who did the movie, and he made I like it. I think it's really well done. They make some changes from the comic, but good changes. Mm-hmm. And later he made Captain America: First Avenger, which to me just said, hey, I'm going to make The Rocketeer again, but with Captain America.
Oh, I've heard about this Captain America.
Yes. Anywho, that's neither here nor there. So, but before we begin our main discussion, a little bit of sad news. At the time of this recording, this past week, Keith Giffen died. 70 years old. It's not like tragically young. Although, I'm sorry, when I saw that he was 70, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm getting older. I saw 70 and I was like, oh, he wasn't that old.
Yeah. Well, and it was sudden.
Was it sudden?
Yeah, it wasn't a long sickness. I think he had a stroke or...
I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
I want to get this right? Let's go on the social medias. Here's more shit for you to have to cut out, Paul.
That's all good. So was it sudden?
Yes, he had a stroke. A little, very brief period of time from it, and then he passed. So it wasn't from a long illness.
I don't know. Is that better? I don't...
I mean, nothing is good. I mean, Keith Giffen died, and I'm very sad about this. The good news, if there is any, is that he got to write his own obituary, as it were.
Yeah, you told me this. Tell everyone what he said.
All right, let me pull it up. I didn't memorize it. So his family posted, and this is timely, so he must have written this. So his family posted this on his Facebook website, probably Twitter and whatever else he's involved with. But he wrote, I told them I was sick. Anything not to go to New York Comic Con. Thanks, Keith Giffen, 1952 to 2023. Bwah, ha, 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 ha.
Which is awesome. I mean,
which is awesome, right? He was a curmudgeonly satiric person till the end. But it was right before New York Comic Con, so he must have, or they changed it. But it's so like his legacy is everybody, it easily dismisses. Oh, he's just a funny writer, and he was a funny writer. He wrote very funny things. From Trencher to Justice League International to Ambush Bug to a lot of his career had extremely biting satire. And it wasn't just kind of dumb yuck comedy, but very meta. I mean, he was a very meta writer. He wrote very serious stuff, too.
Yeah.
Legion of Superheroes and various other works that he did that were very serious. But, he is most known as... a writer who injected a lot of very timely humor into his work.
Mm-hmm. He's very satirical, a lot of parody. I compare him favorably, mind you, to Steve Gerber.
Yes.
So someone who wrote, humorous things, but at the same time was really commenting on what was happening in society and commenting on, the ills of the world. And sometimes, that can be more poignant. Poking fun at something. Yeah.
And he had that. And you could even see, probably three creations that he is most known for are he either created or co-created Lobo, Rocket Raccoon, and Ambush Bug. You know, so these are characters that, you know, two of them, and Ambush Bug was always done for laughs. But, you know, I mean, Lobo comes from a referential satirical bit.
Yeah.
And
now the problem with Lobo is people decided that they wanted to take that seriously. And I think Lobo lost its impact when other people took it over. But,
I mean, there's some cool about that. I mean, Stephen Bisley doing Lobo is artistically phenomenal to look at.
Yeah.
You know, his work with McGuire and DeMatteis in Justice League International. I don't know who ultimately created One Punch, I think Giffen is obviously well credited for Ha 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 Ha.
Yeah, which is just
it's legend.
Yeah, it's iconic. You know. Yeah, I mean, of course, he co-created Jamie Reyes as well.
Right. We've talked about before. Probably my favorite iteration. Well, I don't want to say it's my favorite iteration, but I think it was a fascinating iteration of Blue Beetle.
Was there ever a Blue Beetle Ambush Bug crossover?
Gosh.
if there's not, there should have been.
My memory as an old man is not as great as it used to be. So do I remember if there was? No, I don't know.
There was, and I don't know much about this. There was some controversy of him. I don't know if stealing is the right word, but emulating other people's artwork.
Yeah, it was one artist in particular. I forget the artist's name off the top of my head, and you could fix this and post if you want. But I think the controversy was a little more contrived. I think it wasn't. Giffen was very into this artist at the time, and so I don't know how some writers and artists don't accidentally plagiarize. Right. It's like, I don't know how you can't in some ways, especially as a writer, like you read like a phrase sometime like 20 years ago and it sticks in your head and then suddenly it comes out in your writing. But it does bring up the point that Giffen was also an artist of some note, not just a writer. But yes, I mean, there was some claims that he had plagiarized another artist. I think Giffen was like, he confessed to it, but I don't think he ever said it was.
Yeah. Like, and again, I don't know all the details,
but he left comics for a couple of years because of it.
Yeah. And apparently, I mean, what he said was, you know, I have been influenced. He said he wasn't copying, but he really admired the style. So he tried to emulate it. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, like you said, writers, artists, directors, I mean, hell, Quentin Tarantino made his entire career on emulating other people. You know, obviously, if you have influences, it's going to be reflected in your own work.
And when his work at the time was coming out, that I didn't know. I was much younger when this was happening. I wouldn't have been able to spot this. It's not like he was Greg Land, who just takes porn and photoshops it and copies over it. So,
you know, right, exactly.
I mean, it has to be acknowledged. This is a thing that has existed. He was very well known as a bit on the cranky side in general, which I most certainly can appreciate as a crank myself.
there's nothing wrong with being a little cranky from time to time. Right.
But then you read the testimonials from other fellow creators who acknowledge that, but also say he was the sweetest guy you could ever meet, and you could talk to him for hours and hours. And I think Gail Simone, if I'm doing this incorrectly, I'm not certain, but who in a testimonial was talking about how you could sit with him for 2 hours and he would come up with more crazy comics ideas in 2 hours than most people could come up with in their lives.
Yeah, no, a true legend in the genre, in the medium. Yeah, he's just great.
Yeah, and it just, we've lost a lot of great writers and artists over the past couple years, but this one hits really hard for some reason, because I think of like how influential he was to me as a kid reading comics, and some stuff, like as a kid I was reading, I didn't know who Keith Giffen was, but then I look back and I was like, oh man, he did this, he did that, he did this other. I didn't even remember that these comics that I read were Keith Giffen necessarily, until I got older and started researching history and really paying attention more closely to the creators. So, I think it's because it was unexpected. Another point of issue, like him as an artist, and we were talking about like his art changed a lot over the years. He was someone who was never static, but he also did all the breakdowns for 52.
Yeah, right up. I mean, he continued to work throughout his life. I mean, late into life, and still, you know, I don't want to mention any names, but some creators kind of lose a step from time to time, and he didn't seem to. He was still there, still cranking out good ideas. Definitely, definitely a legend.
Yeah. And rest in peace to who I think will continue to refer to as the great Keith Giffen. He was one of the great. He himself was one of the great characters in comics.
Absolutely. Let's just finish this discussion off with. let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll keep the nostalgia train rolling.
Yes.
With a little Rocketeer.
And we might hear from Keith Giffen again at the end of the episode.
We may indeed.
And we're back. Paul, today we are going to be discussing your recommendation, The Rocketeer. Would you like to tell us a little bit about it?
There are two types of nostalgia, reflective and restorative. Reflective nostalgia remembers a time long gone in a wistful, bittersweet way that is accepting, understanding that the past is past and gone. Restorative nostalgia attempts to recapture the past, to reclaim it, to reconstruct it better than it actually was. Most media steeped in nostalgia chooses one or the other to set their story. The Rocketeer attempts to be both. The early 80s saw a rise in a particular style of nostalgia, 1930s retro adventure chic, and it was all the rage. Indiana Jones is probably the most notable of this trend, but others like Romancing the Stone, Tales of the Gold Monkey, and Tailspin are just a few other examples. And it's understandable why people would be drawn to this era. It's a unique moment in time. It's both simple and wholesome. And yet, it's where crime runs rampant and technology is advancing in leaps and bounds. There's a depression and poverty is rampant, and yet there's a few ultra-wealthy basking in glitz and glamour. It's a time of peace, but one where the threat of war is looming. It's a time when attitudes are changing and advancing, but only on the surface. Deep down, prejudice and hatred still linger. It's a time of great hope, shrouded in fear. Plus, it has this great Art Deco design aesthetic, which is just so cool. And The Rocketeer leans into all this with gusto. Created by writer and illustrator Dave Stevens in 1982 as a backup strip in Pacific Comics' Star Slayer, The Rocketeer soon became popular in its own right and moved to its own feature. It tells the story of Cliff Secord, a down-and-out stunt pilot who inadvertently comes into possession of a prototype rocket backpack, complete with instruction manual, and decides to use it to make some money to impress his gal Betty, a character not so subtly based on pit-up girl Betty Page. And with the help of his pal Peavy, he creates a neato helmet, an impromptu costume, and hits the sky as the Rocketeer. This brings him to the attention of crime bosses, the military, G-Men, Nazis, and the mysterious inventor of the backpack himself, all of whom want the invention for their own nefarious, or possibly benevolent, purposes. And along the way, Cliff will stumble and bumble his way into being a hero. Maybe. There's a lot more to this character than we're first led to believe, and a shadow hangs over his past. Rocketeer is overflowing with Americana. Dave Stevens' influences are obvious. Movie serials in particular, and specific examples like Commando Cody and King of the Rocketmen in particular. The art style is lovingly reminiscent of that time and drawn with sepia-toned nostalgia goggles, but at the same time, Stevens is not afraid to mention or allude to some of the more unsavory attitudes of the time. The Rocketeer is an unusual comic, beautiful and whimsical, invoking all the pleasures of an imagined past, while at the same time bringing all the baggage of that past along for the ride. It's nostalgia writ large, both reflective and restorative. And it has this great Art Deco design aesthetic, which is just so cool. Brian, what did you think of The Rocketeer?
That was fun, right? Tales of derring do and fisticuffs and high-flying adventure.
And gals with gams.
And cheesecake galore.
Oh my goodness.
Va-va-voom.
So you're a Betty Page fan.
Who isn't, right? Apparently, yeah. Betty Page. But no, it's what astonishes me is, so I'm reading, you know, of course, I had to go into it. I had not read The Rocketeer before your recommendation.
Oh, really?
Huh. So, you know, of course, I'm looking up history, and it's amazing how long it took for these 120 pages to get made.
Yeah. I mean, well, it was independent stuff. And
right. And yeah. And like, it went through various publishers, and, you know, they kept going bankrupt on him. He gave up, right? I mean, he just finally was like, I'm not going to do this anymore. So what we have is what we have. I think he licensed out at some point.
Well, Dave Stevens died back in 2008, I want to say. Yeah, very young. Just he had leukemia. So yeah, so when he died, his estate licensed it out. It's IDW has the rights right now. Right. So there are more Rocketeer stories, but this was pretty much it for him.
But the one, you know, this ends, the collection that we read is the entirety of his wit, and it ends with a pinup page, which is fantastic.
And it ends on kind of a cliffhanger. Well, a cliff's a cord hanger.
So many cliff jokes that we could make throughout this discussion. But yeah, it's like when I finished reading it the first time, I was like, but it's unresolved. We'll get to that, of course, but it was like, this is it.
Yeah, and for me, it was like, oh, this story's just getting really interesting now. There's not a lot of rocketeering in The Rocketeer.
Ooh. No, he doesn't use the rocket very much.
No, he uses it in the beginning, and he uses it a little bit towards the end, but most of the time, he's just sort of getting beat up.
There's a lot of fisticuffs, but the rocket itself is, he doesn't don the costume very much.
No, not really.
And when he does, he can't figure out how to use it.
Well, that's the thing.
Which is a running gag. It's a running gag throughout the whole thing. And it's great.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I said he stumbles his way into being a hero.
Right. And when I look at it, I was like, I'd be the same. I would be less competent because at least Cliff's Secord has flying experience.
Yeah. Well, he is a pilot and apparently a very good one.
Right. Yeah, he's a stunt pilot, but he never quite figures it out.
No, I mean, usually, you know, you get those training montages and then suddenly he's quite adept at it, but
yeah,
never gets there. And I think a lot of that has to come with the fact that he didn't, Dave Stevens, that is, didn't get to continue this story. I do want to mention, though, that Cliff is a bit of a jerk.
Yeah, he's
doesn't have the best motivations in the world.
Well, no, and his relationship with his girlfriend is
problematic. We'll get to it. I find the whole Betty subplot to be, I think it's problematic. At the same time, it's the entire motivation for the comic,
right?
Which is yeah, because the whole idea is that, all right, well, let's get into the actual story.
Before we, to reiterate kind of what you mentioned in your intro, the art is absolutely out of this world.
Oh, it's really good, isn't it? It's just lovely.
Bright and shiny, and it pops, and it's so well done. It's gorgeous to look at.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. And there's so much attention to detail. Grim and gritty,
you know, shadowy. It is bright. It just, wow.
It definitely invokes that, you know, shiny, glittery nostalgia. It just nostalgia drips off every page.
Yes.
The story begins with Cliff, who is Cliff Secord, who is a barnstormer, stunt pilot, and some criminal folks are being chased by the cops. And one of them stashes a bag in Cliff's cockpit, and it turns out to be an experimental rocket backpack. And I know it's just a comic, but in reality, if you had one of these things, how would you not burn your butt?
Thank you. That was one of my notes that I was going to get to, was he should have been on fire from the get-go.
Well, he wears asbestos pads with, you know, steel-reinforced buns.
This is not actually true. It's never explained how he doesn't set himself on fire.
I don't know. I mentioned a couple of things in the introduction, Commander Cody and the Rocket Men. I don't know if you've ever seen any of those old serials, but I mean, it's essentially the Rocketeer, and they have the same thing. It's just like, you know, the rocket goes off and it's just like sparklers on the bottom. It's not explained and it doesn't need to be. It's just fun.
Yeah. Willing suspension of disbelief.
Exactly. It works because it's Because it does.
And it's comics.
So Cliff finds this backpack and immediately thinks, oh, I'm going to use this thing to make some money so that I can buy nice things for my gal.
Right, because he's got women problems.
Yes, he has this.
Or woman problems.
He has this woman he's been stalking, I mean dating, for a while, whose name is Betty. Obviously, she is Betty Page. So Cliff wants to make some money, make some extra cash, and he has his best buddy, Peavy. And Peeve is an engineer, or what would he be? He's more of a mechanic, I guess.
He owns a hangar, right? Yeah. And that's where Cliff keeps his planes.
Yeah, and he does the work on the planes and stuff.
He does the work on the planes. He smokes a lot of cigarettes, and he's like the voice of reason, though. He's like the reasonable buddy. You always have to have that.
He's an older fella too, so he's kind of like the grandfatherly type.
He's got wisdom.
He is the Jiminy Cricket of this story. So PV makes a really cool helmet.
Yes,
like I said, neato. Cliff cobbles together, makes himself a little costume. Turns out that he's late for his job where he's supposed to be stunt flying. So his alcoholic friend decides to take over for him. This scene, I know it's a little contrived, but Cliff has to go up and save the drunken pilot who's in this plane. And this is, we get our first sort of daring do. And this is actually quite good. I wish there was more of this in the comic, because you get Cliff flying around in his new rocket, not exactly sure how to use it. So he's bumping into things, and it's just a really cool little adventure scene. And he ends up saving his drunken friend, but the plane crashes, of course.
Into the water tower.
He's caught on camera, and the press dub him the Rocketeer. And suddenly he's incredibly famous. And all of this happens in about 3 pages.
There's the great bit where he's, you know, flying off to do this. And of course, he can't figure out how to use the thing. And somehow he manages to get in the plane, right? And he can't use the stick, right? And this is when he ends up crashing. But he throws Malcolm into the crowd. It's the first example of crowd surfing, I believe.
Absolutely. It's pretty good stuff. And luckily, they all catch him. So he's okay. Yeah. So then we get our first appearance of Betty, who comes to see Cliff, and she's quite the looker, I tells you.
She's a doll. She's a dame.
But it's so funny that she goes like, oh, where's Cliff? He's like, oh, he's using a stolen experimental engine to make you some cash. And she just kind of goes, oh, Cliff, that palooka.
What wacky thing will he do next?
Indeed. Okay, and again, I guess we'll get into it in more detail, but this is where I'm a little bit, I don't know, I'm so torn on this Betty character. I mean, she's obviously drawn as cheesecake pinup girl.
We get the guard belt and stocking showing, and you know the whole bit,
right? But everything she says is, you know, this is my life, and I'm doing what I want to do. She is seemingly very empowered of wanting to be, you know, liberated,
right?
But then it's undermined constantly throughout the rest of this comic. Yeah,
it's a weird juxtaposition, and it's, remember, this was written in like early 80s.
Yeah. 84.
And it's referencing the 30s. So there is a danger of overreading.
I don't think so. I mean, I'm just going by the words on the actual page. But she talks about, you know, I'm doing this for me. She's saying all the right things as far as she's being
a
very
deadbeat boyfriend, and she wants to have a career, and he keeps screwing it up. And she is trying to do things for herself while still being, you know, the girlfriend, and she's kind of like had enough.
Right. And I think rightfully so. She's very, like I said, liberated, very sex positive. And he's just a jealous doofus is basically what it is. He can't deal with that. We'll get into more of that later in the story. But what happens is, because of his antics, obviously people know that he has this backpack, and what seems to be sort of a gangstery kind of guy shows up and is trying to get him to return the backpack. But along the way, they get another car full of other gangstery types.
There's a lot of gangstery types.
Yeah, but they never turn out to be gangstery types.
Right.
So the original gangstery type turns out to be a G-man who's just trying to get him to return the backpack.
National security and all
National
that.
Security. And then the other guys tend out to be Nazis.
Yes, because you can't not have Nazis.
Well, yeah, it's the 1930s. You have a built-in, ready-made
Although
villain.
The bad guys are Nazis because all Nazis are bad guys.
Absolutely. Let's just make that clear so that, I mean, I know it might be a controversial statement these days, but Nazis are bad.
Nazis are bad, and punching Nazis is always good.
Absolutely. Nazis are not okay. For this time period, they are the ready-made bad guys. So the Nazis run Cliff and the G-Man off the road. So he ends up using the backpack, the rocket pack, to get away from danger and come back to Peavy, who, the backpack gets a little banged up from all the crashing and smashing. And he has Peavy do some changes to it.
And it should be noted that the G-Man, who was driving the car, dies, which is a complication that Cliff has to face down the line.
And then he has a little altercation with Betty. Betty's there in this argument, and Cliff's being a jealous so-and-so. And she says, "This isn't about money. You can't own me. It's my life." This is very good. Betty is doing and saying all the right things. And again, it gets undermined constantly. Anyway, we find out that Betty is taking some risque photographs for a fella named Marcus of Hollywood.
I don't know if he's supposed to be like standing for like Irving Claw or someone like that, but yeah.
I looked it up. There was somebody that he is supposed to be. There's a guy named Ken Marcus.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's sort of like a penthouse photographer who was on the scummier side of things. Obviously, again, more of these antics with Cliff. So more people are after him.
But at the end of this particular issue, you're talking about Betty gets kidnapped.
That's what I mean. But more people are after him. So kidnap Betty in order to draw him out. Cliff, that is.
A whole nother group.
Everybody wants this backpack.
Yeah.
And everybody's telling Cliff, just give it back. Just get rid of it.
And he will not.
But he won't, because he needs to make it to make the moolah.
Right. His whole purpose is just to make money.
Exactly. To make money to impress the girl who says, "I don't want money. You don't have to impress me." It's a vicious cycle there.
Cliff is a moron.
Yes.
We danced around that word, but at the end of the day, yeah. I mean, he's just an idiot. And to be honest, that never changes.
No, and this is why I'm, just thinking about this comic is, usually you have the guy who's going to be, a little flawed, but overall very heroic in the end. I don't think Cliff ever gets there.
No.
He never has the justified motivation.
And I think that's okay.
It's fine.
It's not okay if he was a real life human being who can't learn from there. But for this comic, it works.
Yeah, so Betty is kidnapped. So Cliff goes flying out in this really cool kind of snub-nosed airplane. Called the Bulldog. By the way, there's a bulldog named Millie.
No. The bulldog isn't named Millie. Millie is the woman who runs the Bulldog Cafe.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. You're absolutely right.
Did you just call poor Millie a bulldog?
Well, bulldogs could be called Millie too. Maybe they're both called Millie. Who knows? Well, anyway, there's a bulldog cafe.
But Millie shouldn't be called bulldogs.
No. Absolutely not. I apologize for offending Millie.
She's really mad. And you can make her mad because we skipped the very first intro scene, which I think was a lot of fun. But Millie, the owner of the Bulldog Cafe, which is an important part of the story. Well, it's not an important part.
It's a recurring setting.
She is a whiz with the frying pan and the bonking people over the head with the frying pan.
Pretty darn hard.
You don't want to make it hard, so you don't want to make Millie mad.
Yes. That's something in the very beginning. Cliff gives some bacon to the bulldog, who's not named Millie, but the bacon causes some intestinal distress for the dog, which is why Millie really, really harshly bangs him over the head with a frying pan.
Yeah, the first several pages, it's basically a gag strip.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you think about it, right in the beginning, Cliff gets smashed over the head with a cast iron frying pan. Maybe that explains his moronic behavior.
It could be.
Yes, it's all set up from the beginning.
Yeah. And then you have a gaseous bulldog.
Gaseous bulldog, which was the name of my punk band. So anywho, Betty has been kidnapped.
Yes.
Driving away the bad guys have kidnapped her. They're driving away. Cliff gets in his really cool little snub-nosed bulldog plane and obviously flies really low and smashes into the car. Because if you want to save the girl in the car, you might as well just smash the car.
Smash into the car. And of course, this is all done Like, a lot of this stuff at the airfield during, like, the stunt, during the show. So it's like Cliff and PB and all of these other people are all part of this big show, an air show. So a lot of this stuff is happening on the airfield. So there's a massive crowd.
Yeah, and everybody thinks this is just part of the show.
Right.
Which, you know, if I was in the crowd watching this, I'd be like, this is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the best shows I've ever seen.
Yeah, I was like, I was not expecting this morning when I came to the show and paid my 25 cents to get in or whatever.
So Cliff causes this car to crash into some hay bales, to be fair. Betty is rescued. Everybody seems to be fine. There's one panel here at the end of this issue where you have somebody kind of sneakily watching Cliff and Betty have their little have a little discussion. And there's a guy kind of watching it, but then there's these mysterious hands reaching out. Whose hands are those?
No idea, because that's never addressed.
No, it's these huge monstrous hands that are reaching out for this guy.
It's mystery hands. I mean, we find out that this guy is like captured later by, I think, the feds, but it's...
Yeah, it seems like the feds, yeah.
Hands coming out, you know, grabbing this guy. It is...
It's a cool panel.
It's great, but it's great, like, reference to Cliffhanger. I mean, I don't think it was intentional, but it works because cliffhangers often, like the serialized cliffhangers or the serialized movies back in the day when you would, like, Saturdays, you'd watch, like, 10, 20-minute serials, and then they all end in a cliffhanger. You come back the next week, then the show would just start up, not necessarily right where the action left off.
Exactly. It was just a cliffhanger to get you back next week. And right.
Oh, no,
usually,
these giant hands reaching in. And the next, you come back the next week, and it's like, it's something completely different.
But yeah, so that is a great, again, another homage. Obviously, Dave Stevens's his influences are right there, not hiding a thing. So later we get this fella who's apparently was abducted by these mysterious hands.
He's
one of the Nazis, and he's been given a truth serum to give out all his information. And the feds now know that Cliff Secord is the one with the backpack.
Yeah, he gives up the name.
And then, well, there's some shots of Betty taking some art photos.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very well drawn. Very well
drawn. Yes. There was some attention to detail, as we said.
A lot of attention to detail. A lot of detail.
So Cliff is a little, he's back to being Mr. Jealous Guy. We're not going to keep talking about that. But we go back, we find out Peavy has made some adjustments to the rocket backpack, putting on some fins.
Fins to the left, fins to the right.
It's a rocket backpack in paradise.
Yeah, there's our Jimmy Buffett tribute. But fins and what is it called? The gyro control. Or
Euro control.
Where you're from.
Euro control with extra lab. PV also explains that, dude, you have a instruction manual. It's right here, and gets him to read the instructions. So they do a little training montage. Again, some of this artwork is just beautiful. I know we're going to keep saying that, but it just looks great.
Yeah, this is a beautiful looking comic.
It's kind of like Terrence Malick if he drew a comic book.
Only without, like, you know, 30 minutes of nature scenes.
But very panoramic views. Yeah. Anyway, so you got Cliff doing a little training montage. And then we got our first introduction of the Fancy Pants.
Oh, I called him the Gentleman and the Monkey Man.
The Gentleman and the Monkey Man is very good as well. But they are collectively known as the Fancy Pants people.
Ah, okay.
Yes. So you have someone who's a, you know, tuxedo, bowler hat, monocle, very prim and proper. And then you have your... Again, palooka squats. Yes, exactly. And you think that these guys are they're a little, you think these are criminal types, but it turns out they're probably presented that way.
Mm-hmm.
They take Cliff to the inventor, or they're trying to take him to the inventor.
The original, I kept referring to him in my notes as OO, original owner. Trademark pending.
Yeah, so and then Cliff escapes again. So, but this is actually pretty good foreshadowing. We know that Cliff is acrobatic and willing to do some dangerous stunt work. He's able to jump out of a car onto a moving trolley car. And this will come in handy, this little skill, later in the story.
The best part about this is they he gives up the address where they can find Peavy.
But it's actually...
Boom!
It's actually the photographer's studio.
Right. The photographer, Marcus or Marco of Hollywood. And so the Fancy Pants, is that what we're calling them?
The Fancy Pants, yes.
That seems a little... Well, okay. The Fancy Pants show up, of course, while Betty is what's the word we would in flagrant? She naked.
She done be nude.
She is.
She's full on. Well, you know, to be fair.
In her full glory.
To be fair, she is wearing gloves.
Oh, right, yes.
Marco of Hollywood is a little bit annoyed that they're busting in on his artistic photo shoot. Cliff returns home with his backpack. Again, could have been flying on this thing, but he didn't do it.
No, I mean, he still doesn't really know how to use it.
But Fancy Pants and the Fancy Pants Brigade, they eventually do find Peavy, and they try to take him to a military base. This gets a little confusing.
There's a lot of business going on.
They try to take Peavy.
As we say in the theater world.
Yes, but Cliff is hiding in the car, so he comes along for the ride. It turns out at this military base, there is an experimental aircraft, which kind of looks like a big bug. And that experimental aircraft gets hijacked by Nazis.
By Nazis. And by what Nazis. Is the locust?
The locust. Yeah, it does look like a big locust.
I mean, this came out of nowhere. We you know, I mean, it's just like, oh, suddenly. Well,
yeah, the plot does move along at a brisk pace, let's just say.
At this air show.
Yeah, so the thing gets hijacked. And again, we have one of those cliffhangers at the end of the issue where we see a pair of boots and it's, what'd you call them? The OO?
The OO, the original owner.
The OO. The OO is standing there and is demanding Cliff give that backpack back to him.
Right.
So it's not stated in this, but this the original owner, OO, is based on Doc Savage. But for various reasons, you can't say Doc Savage. So it's just this guy. It is.
Like later on. And I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but it's insinuated in the comic that it's Howard Hughes. And to be honest, this may be unpopular opinion time, but I kind of like the original Rocketeer as Howard Hughes over Doc Savage. I think that works a lot better for this time period Hollywood.
I agree. And actually, in the movie, it's insinuated that it is. It's because they don't, in the movie, they don't use Doc Savage for obvious reasons, because they don't have the rights to do that. So they do make it Howard Hughes.
And see, I think that's perfect. I think that makes more sense to me that it's Howard Hughes versus Doc Savage, because again, it pulls us back into sort of the real world. And this is comics. It's not the real world. I understand. But if we're going to use Betty Page, if we're going to use Clark Gable later in the comic, then why not? Howard Hughes makes so much more sense than Doc Savage.
But no, but at the same time, this is a 1930s nostalgic callback, and he was a big character back then. And there's going to be another cameo later in the comic of another famous character. But, you know, I understand the idea behind it. At the same time, you're right. I think it works better as Howard Hughes. You can tell it's not him because he's not wearing tissue boxes on his feet with long fingernails.
Early for that, right?
Yeah, I guess it is too early.
I don't have my timeline exactly right.
So Cliff decides that he's not going to give the backpack back. Backpack. Sound like a chicken. Backpack. So he decides not to give it back. And instead, he's going to rescue the plane and kind of clear his name, I guess.
The Nazis. So we went on a detour. So this is the Nazis taking over this experimental locust plane.
So Cliff flies off to try to be the hero, but of course forgets that he doesn't have any fuel in his backpack.
Great line. It's like he flies off and, you know, the original owner looks at Peavy and is like, did you guys check the fuel gauge?
Fuel gauge?
Yeah. Two panels later, Cliff runs out of gas.
And just starts plummeting to the ground. So OO gets in his own fancy little plane.
It's amazing how fast he was able to find a plane, get in the plane, and get up.
So one of the fancy man says, he'll end up killing himself, meaning Cord. And Simeon Man says, he's a sap. The squirrels call him brother.
Yeah, I remember this one too. And I was like, what? What does that mean?
Is he nuts? Is that what it is?
Maybe.
Or maybe he's kind of a cute little animal that everybody wants to feed in the park.
We never see his face.
That's true. So anyway, OO takes off. And he ends up saving Cliff. And then, so Cliff actually gets in there. He gets in. He's able to get onto the experimental aircraft, throw one of the people out the plane, which is
not on purpose.
Harsh, not on purpose, but he did it. And then beats up the pilot, and ends up quote unquote landing the plane
Although he can't, he's is trying to radio him to tell him how to land the plane, and but the radio's broken, right? So Cliff is trying to land the plane, and apparently Cliff has never flown a plane before, so he doesn't know
how. Well, to be fair, he's never flown this kind of plane. Not all planes.
Cliff can't figure out how to get the nose up and the landing gears down.
But he does. He does end up landing it into a building and doesn't actually kill anyone. And he's all beat up from this experience and ends up stumbling out and wakes up in a hospital. In the meantime, Marcus of Hollywood is going to take Betty to Europe for career advancement, let's just say. So Cliff wakes up, finds out that Betty has disappeared or is heading off to Europe, and she's currently in New York. So Cliff, in a fit of pique, well, also, he gets a shot in the butt.
Yeah, this is kind of a really funny sequence of events.
Yeah, so he gets a shot in the butt, which kind of makes him a little woozy. But he tries to escape, and he has to recover the backpack,
which conveniently is in the same building. Like, so he's on a military base recovering from his injuries from saving the locust. The OO has disappeared. We don't have any idea that he's gone for good. Yeah, so he's on a military base at a hospital, but apparently there's a lab somewhere in the military base hospital where they have the rocket
and some beakers full of really corrosive acid.
Yeah,
because you know that's what you leave around an experimental backpack full of fuel. So Cliff, in his woozy state, attempts to steal the backpack, refills it with fuel.
Spills a whole bunch of like chemicals all over the place.
They attempt to break in to this room where Cliff is, and suddenly there's an explosion. Boom. And so there you go.
Yeah, that's the end of the series. Thanks for stopping by, everybody.
Exactly. But wait. No, Cliff has actually gotten away, and he's taken his little bulldog plane, which is actually kind of fun, because in the place of the bulldog plane, there's the bulldog.
Right. And
not Millie the Bulldog.
Butch is the name of the bulldog. We just hit my notes. It's Butch is the
Butch. Butch, you're right. Butch is the name.
Yeah, it's not Millie. Millie is a real person.
Yes. So Butch the Bulldog, and there is a note stuffed into his collar. Cliff saying, "I'm off to New York to save my gal or to continue my poor motivations."
Right.
He flies off to New York.
So Cliff is headed to New York. The Nazis are defeated. OO has disappeared, and PV seems to think that the Fancy Pants Brigade are members of Howard Hughes's bodyguards, or they're his group, and so this is where we get the Howard Hughes thing, and then so then we move on to the next chapter.
And now for something completely different.
And this is where it's like really fun.
Yeah, this is actually where I think the story really starts to take off. No, no pun intended.
So to speak.
Yeah, so to speak. So Cliff arrives in New York, where Betty is at a fancy restaurant with a whole group of her Hollywood friends. And she finds out that Cliff might be dead. And she's a little upset.
Right. Before this, we have Cliff flying across the United States, and he meets up with his buddy Goose, yeah. Goose Gander, who, before they go to find Betty, so he gets to New York, and then he meets up with his buddy Goose Gander, and Goose says, "Hey, you should, I've got a rich guy who wants to give you money to do jobs for him."
Right. But real quick, though, Cliff has a little moment where his plane's being refueled, and he goes in and talks to an old lady by the fire who gives him a little hot cocoa. And he does have a character moment where he realizes that his behavior might not be the best.
And he definitely learns from that.
Yes, he learns from that right up until he gets in the plane and heads off to New York.
Yeah.
Or continues off to New York. So Goose decides to, or lets him know that there's a rich benefactor that might give him a job while he's in New York.
Cliff is like, "Screw that crap. I'm going to get the gal.
I got a lady to steal.
I got a lady."
Yeah. We get a little backstory about how they met, mm-hmm. Cliff and Betty. But we also get the notorious motivations of Marcus of Hollywood, who is actually just trying to use her. Betty, that is. He's not on the up and up, as it were.
Shocking.
Shockingly so. So Cliff has this incredible this incredible plan to pretend to be a cab driver. So has someone go in and tell Betty that the cab is here.
Right. So he and Goose travel around New York trying to find where Betty might be. And Goose is like, oh, well, we'll go to this club, this club, this club. And at some point, the phrase bourgeois is introduced.
Now get in the cab, bourgeois.
Do you know what bourgeois is? I'm guessing it's bourgeois.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know,
like within like four pages, we get like five instances of him saying bourgeois. Boosh, B-O-O-S-H-W-A-H, bourgeois.
Yeah, or tie it into the Keith Giffen, bourgeois. So he ends up stealing someone's tuxedo, goes in to get Betty, and then he gets beat up by a whole bunch of bourgeois people.
Bourgeois.
And then, this is just, it's ridiculous. Betty's finally coming with him, and then he kicks her out.
You know? Well, but remember who he gets saved by.
Yes. Well, so
again, fisticuffs. Everything is fisticuffs. I'm going to say fisticuffs like 20 times. And then somebody comes to his aid.
Who's a rich fancy pants.
a rich fancy pants.
Yes. With a very large nose.
With a very, very prominent nose and a ring.
And a piercing stare.
Familiar.
This is obviously, it is in reference to The Shadow.
Oh, well, no, I believe his name is Jonas.
Yes, his name is Jonas, but it is Jonas. Because at one point he says, as long as he's in New York, I'll be sticking to him like a shadow.
Like a shadow. I love this because it's like, it's so blatantly, and throughout the rest of these issues, so it's so blatantly Lamont Crane, it's so blatantly The Shadow.
Yes, it is. It is The Shadow, without a doubt. I mean, to the point where he eventually does have the whole get up. So Jonas, The Shadow, saves the day, stops the fight, pulls him out. Cliff has a little crisis of confidence and kicks Betty out. It's one of those things where it's kind of phrased as he's kicking her out, but he's doing it for her own good kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's just him being
a whiny little snot. Then we get into this really interesting, and I'm going to blow through this a little bit quickly. Jonas decides to get Cliff to help him out with a case that he's been working on.
Right.
He says he's not a cop. He's just sort of someone who, you know, he does his own crime fighting on his own.
Him, are you like a Nazi or are you J. Edgar Hoover?
Yes. So he just says he's an independent contractor.
Between Nazis and J. Edgar Hoover, but that's beside the point. And, so Jonas is like, I follow my own moral compass.
So you find out that there's some killings going on. Someone's been killing old circus performers.
Right.
And it turns out that Cliff was part of that circus circus group.
Yeah. And there's a bit of business before all this where like Jonas sends him into this bar that he has to, and he uses the rocket pack. It's one of the moments where he gets to use the rocket pack.
He does use it.
He uses the rocket pack to go to the 13th floor. Really, really pushing the limits of that rocket pack.
Yeah, so it's a fancy elevator. That's what it is. So he goes up. He finds an old picture of Tina, one of the little person from the circus. And we get this whole backstory about Cliff used to be in a magic act where he was suspended underwater. It was kind of like a Houdini kind of thing.
Right.
And it was this whole act where he'd be underwater for a long time, literally just holding his breath. And then they pull him out and ta-da, isn't that amazing? So one day, Tina, they say midget in the comic.
So Lothar loves Tina. Tina loves Cliff. Cliff loves Ruby.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Yeah.
So Lothar is this, he's the strong man, big hulking guy who's also in the act. Yeah. So one day Cliff doesn't show up, much like he does in the beginning where he doesn't show up for his job. And Tina decides to take his place in order to impress him and try to show her love.
So when Cliff and Jonas are talking, when Cliff gets up to the 13th floor, right?
Yeah.
Jonas shows up and so they have this picture of this carny group, this circus group. And Jonas says, every single person here except you have been killed with their spine snapped. And so this is what Jonas wants Cliff to investigate because he knows, because he's Jonas the Shadow, that Cliff was part of this group. And so Cliff, of course, is like, hey, I'm not the only one still alive. There's another one not in this picture, and that's Orsino, who is like the magician.
He's the main magician guy.
Yes. Right. And so it's Orsino who is doing the water trick that we're working up to.
So Goose and Cliff fly off to Atlantic City, where Orsino is doing his show. He asks for a volunteer during his show, and up stands Lothar.
Well, back to what you were saying originally. So when we get the flashback, like you were saying, like there was a love triangle and a bunch of other things involving Lothar. Lothar was in love with Tina, who was the little person, and all of this stuff. So Tina, the mm-hmm. little person, decided to take part in the water trick, which was usually Cliff's thing that was overseen by Orsino, who is also Clark Gable.
Right. Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
And so what happened is, because of a variety of miscommunications, Tina is very sad that Cliff doesn't love her. Lothar is very sad that Tina doesn't love him. Orsino is just doing his shit. And so Cliff is running late.
Because he's trying to hit on Ruby.
Like shtupping Ruby. And so Tina's like, oh, well, Cliff will love me if I save his job by doing the water trick. Well, Tina is a little person, and so she doesn't have lung capacity for the water trick. And so she ends up drowning. And so Lothar, who was in love with Tina, loses his stuff and rages and goes after Cliff, but he ends up killing somebody, so he is supposedly sent away to prison.
But now he has gotten out again and is making his way through the entire former group of circus performers.
He's killing them all out of revenge for the death of Tina.
Exactly. So now here we are. What we think is, so Lothar tries to kill the magician at his show, but he falls through the floorboards into the ocean, and I guess he drowned too.
Right. Well, because it was there was a bit of action where he was trying to kill Orsino, and he got these weights attached. He was climbing up. This is in the stage. Yeah. And so you have the drop weights from the stage that he got tangled up in. And so he dropped through the floor with the weights attached to him. So everybody thought he drowned.
Everyone thinks he drowned. So obviously, once you think somebody's tried to kill you and they've drowned, we go off to go to a haunted house ride on the boardwalk. I mean, it is Atlantic City.
With some lady friends.
They take them on this haunted house ride in a gondola.
And Cliff all go off. We should also note that during all of this, we have the scene where Betty decides
to not go to Europe.
Instead of getting in the boat with Marco, or Marcus of Hollywood, she gets on a plane back to L.A. This is important.
Yeah, it is. No, it is. She decides
she returns home.
She's going to return to Cliff or to her old life.
Return to her life.
On this little boat ride, everybody's doing some sexy time, with the exception of Cliff, because he's still pining over Betty. So everyone's doing a little smooching.
It could be suggested that he can't rise to the occasion.
But he does. He eventually does rise to the occasion. He needs a device to help him rise to the occasion. But anyway, lo and behold, Lothar is not dead, and he rises from the water, and he tries to kill everybody. But, and this is actually the best rocketeering of the entire Rocketeer saga, Cliff actually puts on his helmet and springs into action.
Well, remember, he gets the helmet and the rocket from Jonas, who just randomly flies overhead
and drops it down to him.
And drops the rocket and the helmet down to Cliff, while also conveniently knocking out the two cops who were trying to arrest Cliff.
Very well done. And then Cliff, he rocketeers into action, and he's flying around in this haunted house ride. He's swooping around. It's really
on fire.
Yeah, this is really great. Yeah, because it's on fire now. He uses the rocket in really interesting ways. You know, because Lothal's kind of trying to overpower him, but he puts the rocket on and pushes Lothal back. It's all really well done.
Yes.
I think. And he eventually does. He uses the rocket to fly them out, but drops Lothal into the fire. He done get burned.
Right. And then, like, at the end of that, it's like Lothar is, like, has both taken a 20-story drop and is on fire. And Jonas, the shadow, is standing.
Just standing there. You just so brutally killed a man. That's fantastic.
Yeah, we are assuming at that point that Lothar is actually dead.
Yes. Now we get the final thing. So Cliff decides, yeah, he's got his cash from Jonas, and he's just going to head back to L.A., get back to his own life.
And there is a moment here where Jonas, or a goose, refers to Jonas, and he said he's almost like a hophead in his dedication to whatever.
Yeah.
And I just laughed and laughed and laughed because, yeah, you know, the Lamont Cranston is a heroin addict.
Yeah. And then Goose has the wonderful farewell line of, remember me to the dames, you hooligan. I might use that in my own daily life. Remember me to the dames. Back at the Bulldog Cafe, Peavy's sitting there talking to Millie, who's not the bulldog. And then suddenly in through the door comes Betty in very appropriate attire.
How you doing?
Yes.
How you doing?
So she's in the back. She's back. And that's it.
And that's it.
That's it.
We're waiting for Cliff to return. Peavy got a telegram saying Cliff was on his way back. And then Betty Page walks in the door and says, I am back.
We got a lot of talking to do.
She's not wearing much.
And that's it. That's it. We get a final shot of just a pinup girl and we're done.
It's like literally the comic ends on a pinup.
Yeah. I do like, there's also a shot of Butch the dog kind of looking behind her. Like, ooh.
How you doing? Yeah, he's
getting a gander. Yeah, and that's it. That is the Rocketeer. That is the complete adventures of the Rocketeer.
It's and just really frustrating that it ended like this.
Yeah, and it has a lot to do with the publication of this comic just reads as like all the failed companies.
It's amazing that it was able to be collected by somebody. Was this IDW?
It was IDW that did it.
What our collection came from. Okay. That it was able to be like cobbled together, because again, like we talked about, I mean, this went through various publishers.
It went through Pacific. It started in Pacific. Mm-hmm. Then it went to Eclipse. Then it went to Comico.
Right. I feel like Dark Horse was involved.
Yeah. Dark Horse eventually got it. And then eventually IDW now has So after Stevens died, IDW took over the rights. But yeah, it's amazing that this much of it got done.
Yeah, especially because of all the travails you read about him trying to like switch from company to company. And again, I think like what I was reading up on it, he just gave up. He was just tired of finding other places to publish it. So I think he just quit.
Yeah. At one point, I read where he's this is when he's with Dark Horse at where he was living in California. There was an earthquake which knocked over or busted some water pipes, which destroyed a bunch of his pages. It's just like the travails of trying to get this done was insane. Yeah. Yeah. So just setback after setback after setback, and he just stopped doing it, which is a shame because this was really starting to get good.
But I can understand that. I can understand. I'm not a comic book creator. I'm not. I'm a fan, you know. But I can see the frustration, and I think that mirrors frustration even creators have to this day about trying to get their work done and how hard that is.
Yeah, which is why, you know, I have a lot of sympathy for when, you know, when there's a delay. Yeah, it's annoying for the reader, but you know, it's totally understandable if you want good work. You got to be patient. And it's just a shame that this didn't go further, or at least Stevens didn't get to it. It's still continuing. There are other creators continuing the stories.
Right. It's a property that is still exists. And I'm glad that Stevens' family or whatever are able to be involved in the continuation of it. But I feel like these 120, 122 pages kind of are the sum total, and sometimes you don't get the end that you want. You just don't. I have so many comic stories, particularly through Image, that will never be finished.
Oh, I know.
We're looking at you, Image.
Yeah. I mean, just the most prominent one right now is the Department of Truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's on a hiatus. I mean, is it coming back? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know. Adventure Man, actually, Adventure Man is coming back, which I'm very excited about. I love that comic.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you get all these comics that you start and you get involved with. And
Black Monday Murders.
Has Hickman ever finished anything? Seriously, has he ever finished anything? But it doesn't matter. None of this matters. It's very frustrating as a comic book fan sometimes.
Yeah.
You invest and involve yourself in a property that doesn't end. With Rocketeer, I can be frustrated that it didn't end. But I think it gave us the end story. Like, we can live. We can live with this ending.
Yeah.
We can make up our own fanfic. We can do whatever we want with what happens when Cliff gets back and Betty is back.
We even have that last line that opens that up, where she says, "We've got a lot of talking to do." So we can start talking about, you know, what happens.
Love stories from Dan Stevens. Absolutely. But can we live with the ending that we have? Sure. Because not every ending has to have an ending. And that's what's weird. Like the idea that the ending of anything, whether it be a TV show, a movie, a comic, a book, has to have a resolution that we personally want to have happen. Well, you know, I don't know if it will.
Yeah. Sometimes just the thing ends. Ask anyone who's a fan of Firefly. Yeah.
Right. Or I have several shows that I have had sads about them ending early, but you know, at some point with Legends of Tomorrow, I'm just going to create my own den and we'll have Booster Gold.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, this is a really, I mean, there's some, you know, problematic things that attitudes in here, but overall, this is just, it's a lovely comic to look at. It's a really, it's an excellent premise at a very particular time in history where this aesthetic was very prominent.
And it's so much fun. And there are so many great lines and so many great visual scenes that we didn't cover.
Yeah. Like we kept saying, it's awesome to look at. This is one of those little unique things in comics. It is of its time, but it's also timeless.
I'm happy that exists in the world.
And I think that's a perfect way to end it. So next time on an all-new edition of the Collected Edition, Brian, what are we going to be reading?
I'm unwilling to commit. At some point, we'll talk about Pogo, which was my initial recommendation. But I have switched it, and we're going to do Ambush Bug, because God bless Keith Giffen. So as of right now, our next episode will be Ambush Bug, the very original limited series, issues 1-4, way back in the mid-80s. I might change it up and add another Ambush Bug miniseries, but for the time being, let's just assume I'm doing Ambush Bug, issues 1-4, the very initial...
The first four issues.
The first four issues, yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun, and very timely.
Yes.
In tribute to Mr. Giffen. Okay.
Yes, indeed.
Very cool. All right, so... Next, what do I say? How do we end this? Okay, listen, everybody, go to our website, collectededitionpodcast.com, leave comments on each episode. Don't go to Twitter anymore. I don't go there. I don't do Twitter anymore. I'm trying to find something new. Maybe I'll do Threads or Mastodon. I don't know.
X. Hey, the kids are all about
X. I'm not doing X anymore. It's just,
it's not Twitter at all, right?
No. X is just
a brand new.
X is just a flaming heap of garbage at this point. I hate going there. So listeners out there, if you have some, what is an alternative to Twitter that everybody's using? What are the kids using these days? Give us some recommendations. Is it Mastodon? Is it Threads? Should we just say the hell with it and just not do social media at all anymore? What do you think? Is social media really social?
I'm an olds who still does the book face. So, you know.
Yes, you.
Nobody does book face except Gen X.
Apparently, Gen Y's new thing is LinkedIn because everybody's positive there. So I will see how long before the downfall of LinkedIn comes.
Right.
All right. So anyway, none of this matters. Just send us your comments and then come back next time. Until then.
Ambush Bug.
Yes, read Ambush Bug. And until next time.
Ambush you.
Keep reading comics, everybody.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy-O production. All materials used on the program are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. If you'd like to give us your feedback, the show can be found online at our website, collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes, or send us an email to comments@collectededitionpodcast.com. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.